This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Arizona Congressman John Shadegg, Republican from the Grand Canyon State's 3rd Congressional District. He's also a member of the Key Energy and Commerce Committee, which has jurisdiction over a number of key issues, including the climate change debate. In 2009, the committee turned out legislation sponsored by the chairman, Henry Waxman, as well as Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey, that cleared the House towards the so-called cap-and-trade system. The Senate tried to do that, initially scrapped the effort, and now the Senate's back with a version co-sponsored by Senators John Kerry and Joe Lieberman. And we want to get the congressman's reaction to that here in the next few minutes. And, Congressman, it's always great to have you with us.
My pleasure to be with you, Greg.
Well, let's first of all start with your initial reaction to this. It seems as though in some circles it's considered very similar to the Waxman-Markey bill. But I'm also getting emails in my inbox from the likes of Friends of the Earth and Citizens Energy saying this is not nearly going far enough from the liberal perspective. So how similar is this to the original type of legislation we looked at last year?
The reductions in carbon called for in this bill are identical to those called for in the Waxman-Markey legislation. So in that respect, it is very similar. Its mechanism is different, however. It uses a cap-and-trade proposal or structure for utilities. And for transportation fuels, it uses a fixed fee. I personally believe that it is an act of desperation by proponents of legislation that address this issue. Quite frankly, I think with the ClimateGate scandal having placed global warming science in grave doubt, and the movement having kind of scrambled to rehabilitate that science without being thoughtful or reflective or taking a lot of time to do it, I kind of think this is just an effort to keep the issue alive. It's not particularly surprising that the most extreme environmentalists in the country would quickly move to criticize this because it doesn't go as far as they like, although I think what it is it's an attempt, quite frankly, in my view, by the proponents of this legislation to divide opposition and conquer, that is to create a different structure than Waxman-Markey in some ways so that they don't face unified opposition from people who are concerned about the bill.
You mentioned that the goals are essentially the same, but the mechanisms are a little bit different. I remember in our previous conversations that one of your biggest concerns was the impact on the consumer. If cap and trade is imposed and emission limits are strictly enforced on power providers, for example, those costs could be passed along in relatively large increases to consumers. Does that change at all based on the way they changed the mechanism here, or is that still a considerable concern?
For me, it is still a deep concern, and actually for any American consumer, I think it's the number one issue. I believe that when one is crafting public policy, one should look at as much sound science as you can on the topic, and I think pretty much in the crafting of public policy, it is a cost-benefit analysis. You take a look at what the evil or what the bad thing is to be avoided, and then you look at the price for doing it. And in, I believe, in the original Waxman-Markey legislation, the threat to America was overstated, but most importantly, the cost didn't seem to justify the results that could be achieved. That is to say that it was going to impose huge costs on every single American business and not gain much, even if you accept global warming, and even if you go beyond that and accept that it's caused by man-made causes, specifically man-created carbon dioxide, it didn't look like we'd gain much for the burden we'd place on the economy. That whole analysis has not changed in this legislation. The structure has changed a little bit, and you might even argue that structure has been improved a little bit in this bill. In the original Waxman-Markey, the entire structure was cap and trade. That is to say, you had to go out and buy, if you were in a business that used energy, carbon credits and pay for those credits. And then at some point down the line, because the credits did nothing to reduce carbon emissions, you had to pay for the technology to reduce the carbon emissions. So many argued, including a number of executives in the utility industry, that we're actually doubling the cost. Buy the carbon permits from the government can go spend those on whatever politicians want to spend it on, and then do the technological improvements to capture the carbon. That made the price twice as high. In the latest bill, in the Senate version that has just been introduced, they keep that structure for utilities, for electric generation, but on fuels, where I think customers or consumers may be more price sensitive, they just put in a flat fee. And one can argue, well, at least the flat fee, well, it's a disincentive, and will harm consumers. It's not a kind of a double taxation.
Congressman, let's talk about the politics of this a little bit from a couple of different perspectives. Obviously, as I'm sure you've seen, several members of the Senate, and I would imagine in the House as well, have tried to make some political hay out of the huge oil spill from that ruptured well in the Gulf of Mexico, and they say that's proof positive that we shouldn't do offshore drilling. The Republican plan over the past several years for energy reform has been all of the above. Do you think that that has been compromised at all based on the calamity that we've seen down in the Gulf?
Well, it's been politically compromised because we've seen an accident and we've seen the consequences, which could be quite devastating from that accident. So I think, in fact, there is a threat, a new threat to the all-of-the-above strategy. I don't think, fairly evaluated, that that is a rational reaction. Number one, we don't know how severe this is going to be yet. First of all, we haven't even hit the same level of oil produced by this leak as was spread by the Exxon Valdez. So we're not even at that level yet, though I think most people believe we're way beyond that. But more importantly, people need to think through, okay, what's the public policy here? There have been thousands of other wells that have not had this kind of catastrophic result. And one of the reasons that we're drilling in such deep waters right now is because we're refusing to drill on land. We have oil here in America under the ground where we could drill at lower cost and with greater security, but we've made a choice not to go after that oil and forced ourselves to go after oil that's nearly a mile deep. So I don't believe that the oil spill is apocalyptic and that it's going to it'll be a factor. And it ought to be studied, and we'll see how well we cope with it, and how quickly they are able to stop it, and what the long-term damage is. But we ought to be also analyzing kind of thoughtfully, how did we get into this mess? Why were we drilling there? How much of this was sheer negligence by BP, which has a history of safety problems, and how much of it does, in fact, cast doubt on the ability, on our ability to produce oil safely, even if we go to great depths?
Last 60 seconds here. Now, from the Democratic perspective, as I mentioned, some members, of course, have spoken out on this, but the president really hasn't, and I'm just curious as to why you think that is. Is it mainly because he initially, just a few weeks ago, allowed for an expansion of offshore exploration to a certain extent? Is it because some of this might be mitigated by the ClimateGate controversy? He doesn't seem to be all that interested in this legislation, at least not in the past couple days.
Well, it's hard for me to guess what's in his mind. I guess my response would be, I don't think he genuinely was going to promote offshore drilling. I think, in point of fact, he was going to expand some offshore leasing, knowing that environmental groups would sue and stop any actual production for years. If you look at the history, it's one thing for the executive branch to lease or issue oil leases. It's something else for oil to actually be explored for and drilled, because in almost every instance, indeed in Alaska last year, every single lease issued by the government, every single one, and I think there were over 1,000, was challenged in court litigation. Also, I think there's some concern about whether the administration was negligent in the early handling of this spill, putting him in a tough position to comment.
Congressman, a lot to digest here, and I'm sure the debate will continue. Thanks so much for being with us, as always.
My pleasure.
Arizona Congressman John Shattuck represents his state's 3rd Congressional District, member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.